and welcome to the latest episode of Talking Talky. If you say latest, then you don't have to come up with a number. I'm Stephen Dixon, and with me today is Matthew Roberts in a PR special of Talking Talky. Thanks for joining us, Matthew.
Oh, lovely to be here, Stephen. I think, actually, it's number 118 of the Talking Talky podcast.
No one asked, but thank you for that. It's going to be hard to get the tone right for this because we get the chance to talk about a Torquay United win and a topping up of the recent results with a 3-2 win over York City. And then don't worry, we will also move on to the 5-1 defeat by Chesterfield, which we saw in midweek. I think we'll kick things off by talking about York City. Let's start with the good and then move on to the bad. Talk United 3, York City 2, and I'm actually going to start us right at the end of the game, Matthew. What were you thinking when York got that second goal back by, 2 minutes from the end?
I was tearing my, I remember I was standing up, one of the only people standing up in the family stand, and sort of tearing my hair out at the time, because I thought, oh no, this is the end of our season. Little did I know that that would actually come on Tuesday night, not on Saturday night.
It was an interesting game, wasn't it? Because for a while it's felt like Torquay were in control of it for spells. Went in at half time 2-1 up. I think probably edged it in that first half, pretty fair to say. And then when it went to 3-1 with that Jarvis penalty, I mean, nerves of steel, to be fair. I couldn't have waited the length of time he did to take that. And it felt kind of okay. Halstead made some cracking saves, to be fair. But when it went to 3-2, like the whole atmosphere at Playmore was just like, oh, here we go. what were your reflections on the match itself then? Do you think we were good value for the 3 points?
Well, I mean, for a start, it was the most exciting game that I've seen this season. That was probably the most fun I've had at a Torquay game since Notts County at home in the playoffs. That was 2 years ago. It had everything, didn't it?
Yeah.
Loads of goals. It was exciting football. Both teams really gave it a go because both teams really needed to give it a go. And it was the best performance which I've seen from us in a long, long time. Certainly since last season. I mean, I've not seen any of the recent wins, so we've sounded pretty good, but this seemed like a continuation of all of that. This was polar opposite to the dross that I saw early in the season, and completely different also to Aldershot, which actually wasn't that long ago. I think the addition of someone like Nublay makes such a difference. Him and Jarvis together, I would love to see them next season, even though we'll probably see neither of them. Optimism. He is such a physical player. And he's a bloody big bloke. And yet he's actually deceptively fast as well. And York, they had to double up on him every single time he got the ball, which allowed others to go forward and create space. He's been the answer, I think, over recent games. He's been excellent.
When it comes down to it, I think we've said it before on this podcast, if we'd had him even a month earlier, we may not be in the dire straits we are now.
No.
But he's the type of player that I always think Torquay fans rally around so quickly, get stuck in. I like play more likes players that roll their sleeves up and work, and he holds the ball up. He maybe doesn't do the leg work, I suppose, defensively, that Jarvis might do around him, kind of buzzing around trying to close things down, but he's quite a canny operator in terms of holding the ball up, keeping us in possession. And like, to be fair, with the way our midfield been this season, keeping possession has been a tricky thing all season. But he's, yeah, a cracking player, and one I sense we won't be seeing next season in a Torquay United shirt. But has been a great addition, and even though it was Jarvis that got the goals against York City, Nublay again had another great game. But Jarvis obviously takes the headlines, I suppose, with his hat trick. What did you make of his performance?
Oh, he was just as good as Nubler, I thought. And again, it was the best performance I've seen from him in a Torquay shirt. He, for the first 20-ish minutes, 25 minutes, I thought we looked completely unstoppable. They were really on the ropes. We were going forward really quickly, really quick out of the traps. And we're creating chances almost instantly, I thought. There, we had a bit of help, certainly for their second goal. I was at the other end. I couldn't, it looked like a horrendous mistake from them defensively. But, you know, a few games ago, we never would have got those opportunities. We never would have gambled in the first place. I thought the two strikers we've got now are the answers to our problems. I think if we had had those, like you say, 10 games ago, we would have been fine, but we didn't. We had to make do with Tope Fadahunsi. Other players who I can't even remember now. Nelson Isigwan at the start of this.
I was going to say, I don't think we've got time to go through players that played for Torquay United this season and have flattered to deceive. But I mean, the second half was nervier, wasn't it? And York City did have more opportunities. I think that second half, for me personally, did demonstrate why both teams have conceded the amount of goals they have. It did. Mark Halstead, like, he shouldn't have to make those saves. Like, I would say two of his saves were like world class.
Oh, they wouldn't look out of place in the Premier League. There was one which was right in front of the family stand, and it's pinball in the box, so you can't. It's so difficult to react to it. And one shot goes in, he manages to save it. Another one goes in, he saves it, and then the third comes in, and he launches himself across the goal and somehow manages to save it. God knows how they didn't score, but he was brilliant. I thought.
My worry is that he shouldn't have to make those saves, which is in a way that we haven't. Like, we've managed to shut out a few teams recently in a way we haven't. I mean, kept a clean sheet against Boreham Wood, kept a clean sheet against Scunthorpe. And yeah, Halstead made some cracking saves, but against York, he had to make some unbelievable saves. I mean, he was there to do it, and he did.
Yeah.
But my worry was how they were creating those chances. I think they should have knocked away a couple of those. But then that being said, we also could have nicked a few more ourselves.
Yeah. I thought they probably had slightly more clear-cut chances, but, you know, our goalkeeper was equal to it. The defensive frailties, like you say, have remained a constant. It's not, I don't think it's, at York it wasn't quite as bad as what we've seen in the last few months. We'll get to that in a moment at Chesterfield. But I think if we had been facing a team which could finish better, like Chesterfield, then, you know, we would have lost. I think probably in retrospect, a draw was probably a fair result on Saturday. I don't think we could have complained much if York had equalised in the end. They were pretty good. I thought their front two, was it John Lewis and Ford?
Yeah, I can't remember.
Those two. I thought they had such a good understanding of each other. They were so close together. Every single time they went forward, they knew exactly what the other was doing, and it caused us problems all afternoon, I thought. But I thought both sides were fairly even, and it made for a cracking game.
The one thing I wasn't sure about is that... sorry, I'm going to do that again. The one thing I wasn't sure about is some of the switches that Johnson made. I felt invited a bit of pressure towards the end. I think it may have come out since that Nubler was carrying a bit of a knock, but I just think he's the perfect player to have on the pitch when you're trying to defend a lead, and that he'll buy you some fouls, he'll hold the ball up a bit. But I think he might have had a bit of a knock.
He did, yeah. He had a hamstring. His hamstring felt a bit tight, apparently.
Yeah, and then as soon as we'd made our third sub, then Jarvis looked like he couldn't walk, which was like, it just felt like such a Torquay United way of doing things. Literally, as soon as that sub was made, Jarvis pulling his hip and like stopped closing anyone down. It's like, oh God.
Well, I had this is when I started to get nervous, when all these substitutions started to be made, because who did we bring on? We brought on Wyatt, Ali Omar, and then finally Ryan Hansen. Oh no, we're in trouble here. And sure enough, Omar comes on, and I saw people saying that he had quite a decent game. Actually, I thought, I don't understand that. I thought he was really poor when he came on. One of the first things he does was the ball comes at him in our half, and instead of controlling it or, you know, passing it to one of his own players, boots it straight out of play. And I thought we looked really shaky from then on, even though we had God knows how many defenders on the pitch. We just looked skittish and as if a goal back was inevitable. And I thought we really let them back into it. But we were knackered. The season, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Hang on, I've got a cold. I'm going to have to cough. God, P's going to love all these edit points.
That's an impressive cough.
But ultimately, 3 points for Torquay United. And I mean, managed to see it out at the death there. What were your thoughts after getting those 3 points? I mean, the first thing I did was look at the results from elsewhere, and I know there's been some debate in the online groups about this, but I felt like the results didn't go our way in terms of Aldershot managing to win and effectively rescue themselves. I was a bit deflated because I know I've been maybe more pessimistic during this run than most. But I just felt like if we were going to get out of the relegation zone, that would have had to have been it. But the teams around us grabbed points too. And I felt so deflated as a fan, thinking we've put that run together and we're still 2 points from safety. I was just gutted.
I was elated when I left the ground.
I was elated with the result. I was gutted that they hadn't meant more for us.
I knew... I've been looking at the live table and the other scores throughout the game, and I knew what the other results had been at the end. But I thought I forgot about that for a bit, because I thought I've seen, for one of the first times this season, I've seen the team put in a performance which they can really be proud of and which the club can be proud of. And, you know, the Playmore was absolutely rocking at times. It was fantastic to see. I mean, if only we'd had that all season. But I see what you mean, in the sense that we've gone on this run, 5 wins in a row, and we're still in the same position as pretty much where we were when we started.
Well, that's the thing. Like, my brother's a bit of a casual fan, and I took him to the Eastleigh game a couple of weeks ago, and I said we are on a bit of a run, and he was like, oh, like how far away are you? And I can't remember, but at the time we were 4 points off or whatever, and. He asked me again after that result of the weekend. I was like, oh, are they out of it now then? And I was like, no, they won 5 in a row, 2 points from safety. And he was like, how? How has that happened? But it shows how piss poor we've been for the rest of the season, doesn't it? Yeah. And you don't... Well, we will get on to the Chesterfield game shortly, but you don't get relegated from one result at the end of the season. You get relegated from your results over the whole season. And we haven't got enough of them. It's been not good enough. But people were daring to hope, weren't they, at that setup after the York City game. Actually, I just want to, just before we move on to the Chesterfield one, I just want a quick word on how Evans did in the midfield, because I was a little bit worried myself with Lapsley being out again. He's been out a little bit too much this season, well, I think.
He gave everything, I thought, Evans. He tried to be everywhere, and he tried to fulfil the Lapsley role as best he could.
I think I genuinely think he was told, like, behave like Tom Lapsley. Like, yeah. Do your best imitation. Like, I don't want you to be a creative little Cam. Like, I want you to run around and get in people's faces. And he did do it well, like, to his credit.
He tried. I don't think that he really... I don't think he really had much in terms of product. I don't think he really added a lot. And my girlfriend said, "Oh, Evans isn't very good, is he?" And I thought, and you know, it was her first football game, and this was the first player that she picked on. So I thought, well, that's a decent barometer of our squad.
Who did she think was good?
Nublé. Although more for his physique, I think, than his.
But I can see the similarities between yourself and Nublé. So why she thought he was good looking.
and Jarvis as well, of course. Again, though, I mean, his hair got a few good comments.
So, I mean, for you in terms of that match, who would be man of the match for you? Does it go to the hat trick here?
No, Halstead.
Halstead for his saves.
He because you have to give, you know, the man of the match always has to go, I suppose, to the bloke who scored three goals, and I understand that. But if Halstead hadn't had the performance that he'd had, we would have drawn at the very least or lost, probably. I think he was unbeaten. Okay, it sounds a bit weird to say he was unbeatable for a bloke who's let in two goals, but I don't think he could have done anything about those goals, and no. He did his absolute best to make sure we didn't let in any more. He was excellent.
Yeah, so a 3-2 win. Buoyant Torquay fans bouncing into the last three games. And who comes next? It's Chesterfield. Third place Chesterfield. One of the best sides the conference has seen. And this is in a season where there's a lot of very good conference sides right at the top, a lot of dross in the middle, and some shite at the bottom. So, going into that Chesterfield game, let's take what we know about the result out of it for now. What were you thinking going into the Chesterfield game in terms of what we needed from that game? Because I think that was, everyone was trying to do their fag packet maths after the York game. What do we need out of these three?
Pre-match,
what did you think we needed out of Chesterfield?
At least a point, I thought. Because I didn't, again, you've got to assume that no results are going to go your way. So I thought, I was trying to be realistic. I thought that, yeah, there's no reason to fear Chesterfield because we've been on a fantastic run of form. Surely everyone is going to fear us. But I also thought, when at the end of the game on Saturday, everyone looked knackered. But I put that out of my mind. So I thought, yeah, we'll get our points. We'll be okay because we're on a good enough run of form. Little did I know that would not be the case. What were you thinking would happen in your optimistic mind?
I'm probably a naturally negative person. I felt like, and I still feel like, that the bigger chance. So 4 points, I think, is what we needed from our last three fixtures to have a shot. I think. Mm. I mean, 6 points would be lovely, and 6 points, and I think we would have stayed up. 4 points, I think, you give yourselves a shout. With where I thought we'd get those 4 points is I thought we were more likely to get a point out of Chesterfield than we were out of Wrexham. And I know everyone's banking on us trying to beat Altrincham in the weekend. But I always felt that extra point was more likely to come from Chesterfield despite what people say about Wrexham perhaps being on the beach for the last day of the season.
I don't buy that at all. Not at all.
Yeah, no. We'll move on to that shortly. But that was the... I always felt like we were more likely to get a point at Chesterfield than elsewhere. That being said, I felt like much the same as you, that we'd run a hell of a race against York and had seen it out. And I mean, the players were sinking to their knees, you know, at the end of that game. What I didn't expect, I have to admit, was the drubbing that we got. 5-1 defeat to Chesterfield. And it's a result that is... really brought goal difference back into the equation. Our goal difference isn't great, and it wasn't great compared to those around us anyway. But the way it is now is that it's effectively worth another point with the way the league table's sitting. We're 3 points off Maidenhead immediately above us. And I think we're 7 goals down in terms of goal difference. So it's really worth another point, and we didn't need that drubbing. A 1-0 defeat would have been better than that in terms of trying to turn that around. So it really sucked the life out of me in terms of watching that performance. What What I think was most disappointing is that, I mean, Chesterfield are a good team, and we've been a poor team. So you can't, in many ways, you can't argue with the fact that a team at the top can beat a team near the bottom 5-1. I can see that. The issue was, I think, from my perspective, is that they were good, but we were dreadful. Like
yeah, the
performance was, I mean, it took them 20 minutes to open the scoring or something like 20 minutes. But they could have had three by then, if we're being honest. And we were giving them goals. Like, okay, they were a better side than us. I'm not saying they weren't, but we didn't half help them. And that's what was most disappointing, is that we've given them three of those goals. and it has an impact. And to not be in the game because they're better than us, but we give it a good go. I think a lot of Torquay fans will get that. But watching that performance against an admittedly good side, it was just so disappointing after the run we've been on. But I think, as you say, that I think a lot of players were spent, and it felt like a performance where they put a lot into the run, and that was one that a game too far.
Yeah, it was. One thing that I've sort of picked up was that Lapsley's worst game for us.
Yes, I know it's easy to be wise after the fact, but it speaks, the decision to start him when he clearly wasn't fit, I think is a tricky one to square when you've got, okay, Hansen and McGavin have been poor. I'm not saying they're not good players, but if it's a half fit Lapsley, like you got to take the someone who at least feels confident in their own body. That it's easy to be wise after the fact. So, and I can see the, I mean, I'm a big fan of Lapsley, but it was a poor game, and then he was hooked after 20 minutes anyway. So he doesn't, he doesn't get the rest that he might have needed for the Altrincham game. He's cost us with a pretty poor performance. I mean, in those first 20 minutes, even when they didn't score, like even when we're under no pressure, no one was finding a yellow shirt. It felt like, it was just one of those games where it just took you back, to how poor we've been kind of mid-season and earlier in the season, where it felt like almost the game was being played, like two different games were being played. Like when we had the ball, there was no space and you could never find anyone. And when they had the ball, there were just open spaces everywhere and kind of free reign to do what you want. The only thing that I was clinging to in those first 20 minutes is that they hadn't scored. I was like, well, what if this is just one of those games where they just like pepper us the whole game? But in fairness, that hope wasn't a big hope, because we weren't giving a performance that you felt like, oh well, at least we'll put in some last ditch tackles. I mean, to be fair, we did put in some last ditch tackles. Donnellan made a couple of cracking tackles, but it never felt like we were scrapping with it. Like it just felt like we were playing two different sports. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I mean, it does concern me with the decision to start Lapsley on Tuesday. I know what you mean about, clearly he doesn't trust McGavin or Hansen, and that's a damning indictment of how they've performed this season. And
his own recruitment.
And the recruitment as well, yeah, he brought them in. But Johnson was saying today, over the last couple of days, that Lapsley had passed a fitness test. They thought he was fit on the morning of the game. I thought, how can any competent physician or club physio, assuming we have one, declare that Lapsley is fit when it became crystal clear within a few minutes of the start of the game that he was way off the pace and nowhere near capable of lasting, well, as it turned out, more than what, half an hour, I think?
Yeah, I think something like that. And to be honest, I mean, some players, you can kind of nurse through a game a little bit, but Lapsley's game is completely built on his ability to charge around like a madman.
Yeah, it does concern me at times with the lack of competence in various departments of our club. Whether Gary said to the physio or whoever, just give him a clean bill of health. We've got to get him into the game. Can't start anyone else. We haven't got anyone else.
I'm assuming Asa Hall's omission is that he can't handle a midweeker these days. I didn't see anything confirmed from the club, but I assume that was the case with him.
Well, you'll never see anything, will you? I mean, just like you didn't see anything for Lapsley's omission at the weekend. But with Hall, I can understand that because he was one of those who looked absolutely shattered on Saturday, and can't blame him. I mean, I get why people would want him around next season for his experience and all he's done, and he has been very good at times this season. But we can't be having a player who can do 60 minutes on a good day once a week, and still be paying him a wage. Unfortunately, I was surprised that he had signed on again this season, although I was also surprised that he signed on again last season. So, but I think this season would probably be his last.
I think he can probably recognise. Why is it though that our team is still immeasurably better when he's in that midfield?
How have we not signed a replacement for him?
I think they really hoped that McGavin would be that guy who could ping a few passes around. He's quite big, like win a few headers. But I genuinely think they were hoping McGavin would have been the one to fill those boots, but he's been sadly lacking.
I think we all had fairly high hopes for him. He looked pretty decent in pre-season, but then again, so have a lot of people in recent times. But yeah, it goes back to recruitment, doesn't it? You know, him and Hansen were meant to be the two in midfield. And what a letdown, unfortunately.
But just to take it back to that point, like, why is the rest of the team better when we both said that Asa Hall's not at the peak of his powers? I think even he himself might admit that. But why is the team better when he's in it?
I think you can't overestimate the influence that a player of his experience can bring, even when he's not at the top of his form. Obviously, he hasn't been for a long time, but that must be invaluable. If you're a young player, say 19, 20 years old, and you've got a player of Hall's age who's about 58, and he's able to provide that sort of the experience, the know-how, the confidence, he's able to get the other players going. He knows what to do in situations because he's been doing it for about 30 years. You know, that sort of thing. It's the kind of experience that we wanted at the club for years. And then we finally got it with Ball and Moxie and a couple of others. For so many years being a Torquay fan, you were just subjected to kids playing and inexperienced pros, like, you know, players the age of 25 or so being the oldest on the pitch. And it does make a huge difference having... And also Hall being right in the centre of the pitch where he can direct everything.
Yeah. So, I mean, a tricky day at the office, I think, to say the least. But where do you think that result leaves aspirations for survival? Just for anyone who's listening, so Torquay United that Chesterfield game was effectively the game in hand. Played 44, 46 points. Maidenhead are the team immediately above Torquay United on 49 points. Torquay's goal difference is at minus 22 and Maidenhead's is at minus 15. As I said, Torquay's goal difference not aided by that drubbing by Chesterfield. Where do you think that leaves it?
Well, put it into context. So on Saturday, I was after the game, I was looking up to see, how long does it take to get to Rochdale from where I live? They're coming down. And then on Tuesday, I was thinking, who is it who's won the Isthmian Premier League tonight?
For another trip to Weston-super-Mare.
Well, yeah, that'll be my local game. But Bishop Stortford won the Isthmian Premier League, by the way.
So, thank you. That was good. I didn't know that myself. So
we'll be going there next season. But that probably gives you an indication of where I think we're going. I don't remember a season where we've the sort of viewpoint of, or the feeling of the fans has changed so quickly, because there was such a feeling of optimism around the club and around the fans on online and the grounds on Saturday. And then it's all changed completely after that game. We couldn't lose it like that.
I mean, a 1-0 defeat, as I said, you'd be feeling cheerier than now. It's really killed it as far as I'm concerned. And that's the shame. So, and the goal difference, yeah, it's going to be an issue. I think we're, staring down the barrel. I mean, that run of results has been great, but results elsewhere haven't fallen our way. Some, you know, York even won a few games a few weeks ago. Aldershot have won their last two. Dorking pulled together a couple of results. I've said it before in this podcast. Like I keep going back to the Dorking game where they did us. Was it 3-2 at their place?
We got to send him off as well, didn't we?
I keep going back to that as like, oh my God, like we could have had three more points. They could have three less. You know, it's really tricky. And you don't get relegated for your results in the last five games. You get relegated for your results over the season. I mean, we pulled something together. And to be fair, I thought we'd be nowhere near. And I suppose this is the reasons to be optimistic section is that I thought we'd be nowhere near. I thought three games at the end of the season, we'd be already down, like Yeovil, Scunthorpe and Maidstone. We've had that cracking run of results to mean that we're looking at two games left and we've still got a shot of staying up. So there's your reason to be positive. But it's still a bloody long shot, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I've been approaching it from the view that the last game against Wrexham, you know, doesn't exist, essentially. You know, I've always approached that from the sense that, you know, we're going to get 0 points from it. So we've got one fewer game. And I think even if we do win against Altrincham on Saturday, again, you've got to have results going our way and in a big way. And then even if that does happen, you get to the last game against Wrexham. You can't see anything more than a loss at that, because they're not going to approach that from the view of, oh, it's just a jolly down by the seaside. We've already won the league, because they probably will have.
And I've seen it exactly the same way, in that game's effectively a write-off. And I know not everyone sees it the same way, in that you hope that they might think they're on the beach. If they win this weekend, they're up as champions and that's that. But the gulf in quality between Wrexham, like, and the rest of the National League, or and Notts County, I'll include them in that, and the rest of the National League isn't normal. It's not a normal season. They're not a standard National League team anymore. They've got League One and Championship players running around, to be fair. Like, it's not, even if they are on the beach, they should have enough to beat us. Like,
and they will.
And they should have well, you know, more than enough to beat us. What we've got to do is what's in front of us, isn't it? And so it's Altrincham up next. A game that I think it's 3 points or bust, I think, isn't it?
We could go down this weekend, couldn't we?
Yes, we could go down this weekend. Maidenhead have got Barnet. So I'll file this in the reasons to be cheerful thing. Barnet, you know, are a good team. They're up there in fifth place. They're not up there with Wrexham and Notts County in terms of quality, but they're a good team. Could they notch a few past Maidenhead? Yeah. But Maidenhead are going to be scrapping for their lives. They know what's going on. And are we going to smash Altrincham by a few goals? I'm not so sure. I mean, they're not in great form, Altrincham, but we've got to win, and we've got to try and win well.
Will we be fit enough? That's the question.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the last few games have taken it right out of us. And would it surprise you, really, if we got to Saturday and they announced the team and there's a couple of key players missing?
Yeah, I mean, I always just think Moxie, like
I don't know how he does it. I mean, he's not as mobile as he once was, but, you know, he is, I think he's the oldest player in the squad, isn't he? He must be about 37 at least. Yeah. how he lasts 90 minutes, God only knows.
Yeah, I think, yeah, not as mobile as he was is probably how I'd describe him towards the end of the Chesterfield game. But he's still a good player, isn't he? He's got a wonder a left foot and he can stroke it round. But let's look ahead to that Altrincham game, though, and in the weekend. How do you see it going? Is Talk United's fate sealed this weekend?
No, I think the absolute nightmare scenario will probably come true, in that we'll go down to Wrexham and we'll host their promotion party at the same time. That's the worst of all worlds. I think we'll beat Altrincham. I don't really have much of a basis to think that, apart from the fact that, you know, we've done very well in the last few games. They're up for it, the lads.
My worry is that
Chesterfield is a springboard.
My worry is that run of form that we've had, which has been cracking, I worry that it's been the pressure's off. People think we're down anyway, so let's play some stuff and go for it. My worry is that the Chesterfield game and this game, suddenly they're going, shit, like we could survive here and we need something from this. This is the one, you know, that Chesterfield game. My worry is that we start freezing with kind of, well, we've put in all that work and we're at this point, you know, where can it go from here? I can see a score draw at Altrincham, which I think would also be terrible.
That's a terrible afternoon in store for probably quite a number of Torquay fans.
Yeah.
Go there and it's 0-0 and it's the most boring game imaginable.
Oh, no, I don't think 0-0. I don't think we've got it in us to keep a clean sheet there, and I don't think they've got it in. Like, I think we'll score. I think a score draw and then leave us needing to beat Wrexham by about 4 goals or something in the last game of the season. But like you say, we also need Maidenhead and York not to pick up any points.
Yeah, it's not likely, is it? Maidenhead have this knack of surviving, don't they? They've done it in the last few years. Alan Devonshire is their manager, isn't he? And they're never going to trouble the upper echelons of the table.
They don't want to. I think they are where they are, and they're fine with it, aren't they?
They're like we were under Mike Bates, aren't they? They comfortable third division club, and they're never really going to look to go anywhere else. And, you know, Maidenhead are probably about the same. They know where they are. They know what they're capable of. And this is pretty much it, really. They normally, they're never going to trouble the upper parts of the table, but they're too well drilled and to go down, I think.
So you don't think relegation confirmed on Saturday then?
No, I don't think so. I think it'll go down to the final day, even if we are 3 points adrift. We just need a massive goal difference swing against Wrexham and have to win 4-0. So, like you say, and then it turns out in the 89th minute we're winning 4-0 against Wrexham, and then they score and we go down by minus one goal difference.
And I'll tell you who's going to score it. That'll be Billy Waters.
God, he makes up for missing that opportunity against, was it Bromley in the COVID season too?
Oh, this is we've had a range of emotions in this one, haven't we? But
that's like the game on Saturday.
Yeah, a range of emotions is the way you'd call it. Any other business, Matthew?
No, I don't have any, but I think you do, don't you?
I do. So this is a reminder to the Tust Gulls. The Exiles away player of the season vote closes at 6 p.m. on Saturday. So if you haven't voted yet, get involved by sending your nomination to Pete Groom. He's at TalkiePete1 on Twitter. So get that in. If you're Matthew Roberts, you'll go with Mark Halstead because you're a big fan of old chicken wings.
And if you're Stephen Dixon, you're going for... Oh, wait, you haven't voted yet, have you?
Do as I say, not as I do. Have we got anything else to talk about, Matthew? Do you want to talk about your views on airline food or anything?
It depends which carrier you go for, but no, it's mostly pretty dreadful, I think.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. In which case, that has been the latest episode of Talking Talkie. Next time we speak to you, we could be down or we could be on survival.
Wait to keep the optimism going.
Why would people listen this long? Yeah, thanks for joining us, and thank you to Matthew.
Cheers, thank you.
And thank you from me. Cheers, bye.